Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Hang on the Holy Land, Land-Grant Holy Land's flagship podcast. We are back after a bye week for Ohio State. We obviously didn't have a recap with no game this past weekend, but we are back to preview Indiana for you guys this week. Josh, how are you feeling? What's up? What's going on? Haven't talked to you in a little extra time since our last pod.
Yeah, man. I'm rested. Had a week off, ready to get back into it and talk some Ohio State football and all things happening there. And, you know, it kind of sucks that this game doesn't have the prestige that we thought it would coming into the season, but I think it's still an interesting opponent. And ready to roll, man. Good to talk to you, Gene. Been a while.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Obviously, we will talk a lot about the upcoming Indiana Hoosiers matchup coming up on this Saturday night in Indiana. But before that, just a couple of quick Ohio State news and notes to touch on. We are recording this on Tuesday afternoon, so obviously the big news of the day was Ohio State's latest commitment in the 2022 class, four-star defensive end Kenyatta Jackson. He is the first defensive lineman in the 2022 class, so it's kind of weird that it took, you know, till mid to late October for Ohio State to land their first guy, but Larry Johnson holds in another big name. This is a really solid commitment. It's not just like, you know, they needed a guy, so they found a guy. This is a very quality top 100 player. And someone that Larry Johnson, you know, on Twitter, he's tweeting out a GIF of himself dancing in the locker room. So it's a guy that Ohio State is certainly happy to have, and it moves their class back into the top five overall. And I'm sure it will continue to climb as they're still in the mix for a bunch of different four and five star talents, especially along that defensive line. But it's another big get for this Ohio State 2022 class as it continues to stack really, really high quality blue chip talent.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about just sort of the profile of Kenyatta Jackson. You know, he's like 6'5", 235. Prototypical edge size, and really he could be considered slight depending on how you want to look at it, but that's just a matter of time until he gets in the weight room with Coach Mick. He'll probably have somewhat similar to like a Zach Harrison transformation, but a similar profile to Zach Harrison. Good speed off the edge. I think he plays in a 3-4 in high school, if I'm not mistaken. So you know, good speed coming off that edge. He's not necessarily that JT Tuimoloau body type, but, you know, I've watched some of his stuff online. Larry Johnson, you know, really brought up his character as well. And it's good to finally get that first defensive line commit into the fold, because then he can help recruit others. And I think it's just a matter of time before they land two to three to four more guys to really replenish the defensive line. Not that it needs a ton of replenishment with the current talent we have and their age, but it's really good to get another high quality prospect in the fold.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's rated the number 7 edge prospect in the country, the number 11 prospect out of Florida. We know Ohio State has had that Florida pipeline going for quite some time now, dating back to the early days of Urban Meyer. And he attends Chaminade Madonna Prep in Hollywood, Florida. He's actually the high school teammate of Ryan Turner, who is another Ohio State commit in this 2022 class. So that's a fun little connection they'll have coming in. Two guys that are high school teammates coming in now are going to be teammates at the collegiate level in Columbus. So yeah, it's another big get, and like you said, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more guys enter the fold now with Kenyatta Jackson kind of breaking the ice. I saw Jeremy Birmingham of Letterman Row tweet that he expects this to be like a 3-5 man Ohio State defensive line class, and looking at some of the guys that Ohio State is still in on along that defensive line, that could mean really big things, because while it's taken a while for Ohio State to get this first guy, a lot of the reason for that is because Ohio State's chasing a lot of, you know, really, really high quality talent along the defensive line, and a lot of those guys tend to wait towards the end of the line. So when you're looking at, you know, 5 and high 4-star quality prospects out there, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer to get it. And so, you know, it's a little bit of a riskier play if you're Ohio State, but if they're confident that they could get these guys later and it's worth waiting for them, then I certainly trust guys like Larry Johnson or Ryan Day to get the job done, especially when it comes to defensive line with what we've seen over these last, you know, 10 years or so at Ohio State.
Yeah, with Jack Sawyer and JT in the fold, I guess you can be a little bit more selective in the very next class. And that seems to be what Ohio State is doing. And, you know, the thing I didn't bring up before, but the thing that I like about Kenyatta Jackson is he has family, excuse me, that played in the NFL, his grandpa and two uncles, I believe. And so that doesn't always translate, but it never hurts, right? To come from a football pedigree and for him to be able to lean on, you know, family members and elders that he can kind of learn from and get some tricks of the trade. It never hurts, because you're going to get the best coaching in the world for my money from Larry Johnson, but have that as a resource too, to reach out to family and kind of pick their brains about about things that you're seeing on the defensive line. That's a cool thing too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was actually really funny. I was watching the his Instagram live, which was basically like one of his friends holding his phone while they did the CBS Sports announcement for his commitment today. And while he's holding the phone on Instagram live, his friend's talking to another guy, and he goes, "Oh, he just got a text from Coach Day at Ohio State." And so it was pretty funny, just being like, he kind of gave it away in a bit that like if Ryan Day is texting him that at that time, it's clear that, you know, he's probably texting him about his commitment. So that was another just like funny little tidbit. But it is good to see Ohio State get that 2022 class rolling again. In terms of other just personnel news in terms of Ohio State, there was the Ryan Day and Al Washington both spoke to reporters today, just their weekly press conference ahead of the Indiana game. And they had some injuries on some updates on some injuries for Ohio State coming into this week. Mostly good news. They said both Haskell Garrett and Cam Brown are both expected to be back for Indiana. So it's good. Clearly, they got those guys healthy coming off the bye week. You know, Cam Brown's been pretty beat up dating back to last season, coming back from that Achilles injury. And he's been, you know, on and off this year as well, trying to still rehab that same injury. And Haskell Garrett left the last game Ohio State played against Maryland with some kind of injury, but appears he will be good to go as well. So obviously, good to have both of those guys in the fray, as those are two of Ohio State's, you know, best defensive players so far this year at two very important positions. And then on top of that, Al Washington, they were talking about Steel Chambers and how good he's played, and they said kind of expect to see a little bit more of him moving forward, which, you know, I think Josh and I kind of expected with how well he's played so far. So it's good to see that the coaches are recognizing his efforts so far this season. He did look really, really good against Maryland. He's really flying around there. He looks like a real, you know, this guy was a running back last year, but he already looks like a real natural linebacker. So all positive news on the Ohio State personnel front heading into what was supposed to be a really big game against Indiana, but has kind of lost a little bit of its luster with the Hoosiers, the way the Hoosiers have played. But for Ohio State right now, it's all steam ahead.
Yeah, it seems like the bye came at a really opportune time, right? Not only for guys to get healthy, but for the coach, it gives the coaches an opportunity to, like you mentioned, work, you know, spend some additional time with Steel Chambers, kind of rep him up, get him ready to go for increased playing time. So to get it in the middle of the season, I always consider that a plus. You need a reset kind of halfway through. It's a really good time to get that as opposed to earlier or much later. So it gave them about, you know, 10, 12, 13 days to sort of work on some things, or, you know, it will by the time Saturday rolls around, give them about 2 weeks to kind of refine some things, get guys healthy, like I said, and hopefully continue to bring it together specifically on the defensive side of the ball. And then just to give the guys on the offense an extra week off too is a benefit, especially for the running backs, especially to get those guys healthy. We've seen them dinged up here and there. So a week off for those guys is going to be big. And just, a week in the middle to regroup and get ready for what should be the toughest stretch of your schedule, specifically later in the season.
Yeah, and you know, just in terms of Ohio State's linebacker core, it's really important that Steel Chambers kind of plays well for the rest of this year, because Ohio State's getting pretty thin in that linebacker core. I believe they're down to 6 scholarship linebackers with the transfers of Dallas Gant and Kayvon Pope. Al Washington talked about both of those guys a little bit today, kind of saying, you know, it was understandable. You know, they're frustrated that they weren't playing. He cleared the air with Kayvon Pope. There's no heat between them. I know there was a bad situation on the sideline there, but it seems like, you know, the two parties have made up and that there's a mutual understanding there of what went on, and you know, that's the parting of ways is probably best for both parties. But you know, now Ohio State, you're really, you know, Taraja Mitchell and Cody Simon have been your two starters there now for a couple games. You know, behind them you have Tommy Eichenberg, Steel Chambers, and then just, you know, a couple other rotational guys. We haven't really seen much of Reed Carrico yet this year. You got a couple other guys on the roster that are walk-ons and, you know, guys that haven't played a lot. So the linebacker core is pretty thin right now. They're an injury or two away from being in a real tight spot. So Steel Chambers really coming into his own this year could be really important for that group. But otherwise, I think, you know, health-wise, I think Ohio State's in a good spot. You know, I think Denzel Burke and Cam Brown are probably your two top corners. So to have them both healthy going into a game against Indiana, which is one of the, you know, not a great passing offense, but one of the better wide receivers they'll play all year, and Ty Freifogel. You know, the defensive line is starting to come together. All those guys are getting healthy with Haskell Garrett out there. On offense, you're good across the board. I mean, Travion Henderson is you know, they've taken him out a couple times now for like minor injuries, but that's really just to make sure he's good against these teams they know are going to beat by 50 in those games where he doesn't have to play more than a half. So that's good to see. And of course, all the wide receivers, CJ Stroud's fully healthy now with that shoulder, and he just got another week of kind of less stress on that shoulder, so to be even better. So all in all, I think Ohio State's in a really good spot. And like you said, it's really, this was a good timed bye week because the schedule coming up is very tough. And, you know, you want to be at your best when you play these teams, and you want them to be at their best as well. But especially for Ohio State, having a lot of these top guys healthy going into the final stretch of the season, that's really going to determine their, you know, their quest for a national title and their quest for the college football playoff. It's about, you know, where you'd want them to be right now. There's not, you know, other than Josh Proctor, who's obviously out for the year, it seems that Ohio State is at maximum capacity moving forward.
Yeah, you know, you brought up CJ Stroud, and I kind of forgot to mention it. It doesn't seem like the shoulder has been bothering him, but to get him a week off of game action, it can't hurt, right? Any lingering effects, any lingering soreness that he may or may not have been dealing with should hopefully fall by the wayside with that additional time off. So he's another guy that could benefit from it. And I think it also gives the coaching staff and really the team just – I don't want to say an opportunity to look ahead, but this may have been one of those weeks where, yes, they were full on Indiana prep, and you never want to look ahead, right? And the coaches are going to tell you that too. But, you know, I don't know, maybe they spent a little bit of time, maybe it was a half an hour, something like that. Just, hey, don't forget that we play Penn State in 2 weeks, something like that. So, and, you know, I could be wrong. Maybe they didn't do any of that, but it at least affords you that opportunity to sort of look at some other teams in the conference. Even if you're not playing, it gives those guys on the team a chance to watch future opponents and just kind of see what they like to do, see what they like to run on offense and defense. And maybe that's not something that they had the luxury of doing during a game week. You're dialed in on just that opponent. It gives them an opportunity to, you know, watch some games and see what the Penn States and Michigan States and Michigans of the world are doing out there as well.
Yeah, Josh, I don't know if you saw this. It was from a couple days, or it was actually from yesterday, I think. There was a tweet from College CFB Numbers is the Twitter account, and it's a graph of 2021 quarterbacks in college football, and the Power 5, actually, just Power 5 quarterbacks. And it's a graph of quarterbacks along the x-axis is expected points added per play, and the y is their ESPN QBR. So it's, you know, kind of an upwards trajectory of, you know, the guys that are in the top right are your best quarterbacks in the country. And CJ Stroud finds himself at the very top of the list, right next to Matt Corral and Pitt's Kenny Pickett. So, you know, two guys that have been considered in the Heisman race, and then a guy that Ohio State fans wanted benched after 2 weeks. So it's just funny to see, you know, how far CJ Stroud has come in such a short period of time that, you know, analytically right now, he is one of the top quarterbacks in college football. And having watched him these past two games, really, it certainly looks like it with the way the offense is moving. So it's really impressive. I think, you know, that the shoulder injury, I think, played a large part in that. But also, as we've talked about time and time again, you know, the confidence and just getting the offense working right and kind of running the right scheme of offense with the way that with all these players Ohio State has, there shouldn't be a bad way to run it, but there's certainly a perfect way to run it. And I think the mixture of a kind of Dwayne Haskins and Justin Fields offense kind of mushed together with a lot of the plays they run now is the right way to use CJ Stroud. And he looks really comfortable and healthy. And, you know, now he's playing himself into one of the best quarterbacks in the country just a few short weeks after people were crying for his benching. So I just think that's a little funny to watch. And I'm happy for CJ Stroud that he's been able to come this far and that he's looking like the guy that we expected to see in the preseason.
Yeah, I had not seen that, but it's, I guess it's not surprising given the last couple of weeks. And yeah, it sort of makes Ohio State fans, at least some of us, look foolish that we were calling for this kid's head, you know, a month ago. And then you look at the broader landscape of college football too. You know, you look at a school like Clemson, Oklahoma, and the issues that they've had at quarterback, and it really just forces me and it should force us to sit back and realize how good we have it. And I think it's just more praise towards Ryan Day, especially, and his coaches too, Corey Dennis and guys like that, that they have been able to get CJ Stroud up to speed and really moving fast, you know, based off of what we saw earlier in the year. And it's just, it's kudos to them. And they do such a great job of development that it's a true luxury for Ohio State fans to have and to be able to watch, to see the growth and the progression. And it just goes to show you that given some time, these guys, they know what they're doing. As much as we sometimes say, you know, things to the contrary, these guys deserve the benefit of the doubt. The track record is there. Just look at the Haskins, and the Justin Fields and guys like that. Give the coaches time. You know, they know what they're doing. They deserve the benefit of the doubt, and take it easy on the kids too. If you don't like what you're seeing one, two, three games in, you got to let it breathe. You got to let it, give it some time, because we're really in a great position. And when it comes to quarterback, I would take this situation over that of any other, you know, situations in the country across the college football landscape.
Yeah, and you know, talking about just how good Ohio State has it, we really kind of saw some of that unfold this weekend when we got to watch the rest of the college football world play without Ohio State in action. Not a lot of pretty games this weekend. You know, I said last week that, you know, sometimes when you have an on paper bad schedule, it winds up being good because weird things happen. Not quite this weekend. I would say there was, you know, the one big upset was obviously Purdue over Iowa. I think the Iowa carriage finally turned back into a pumpkin, where having no offense is going to come back and bite you. And they lost 24-7 to Purdue at home. They led up 240 yards to David Bell. You know, I would never see another Big Ten school, you know, suffer a loss like that at Iowa, especially to a really fast Purdue receiver. You know, those two, though, that game was like those two teams playing each other, like both things happened to Ohio State in their two losses. And it was weird to watch.
I have to jump in there. We talked about it a little bit beforehand. On a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised were you at that outcome though?
Probably like a 3. Like, I don't know if I expected them to get, like, they didn't really get blown out. I mean, 24-7 isn't pretty, but like, it's just Iowa hasn't been able to score all year. And if their defense isn't forcing turnovers, they can't move the ball. And that's what happened against Purdue. They didn't force turnovers and their offense scored 7 points. So, you know, that they've been flirting with death, it seemed like, all year. And I still think their defense is really good, but you know, Spencer Petras and that offense, even Tyler Goodson looks like he's taking a step back. Like, they just don't have the guys to get it done on the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, we've seen the last couple of years college football really transform into an offense-first league. Even Nick Saban himself has kind of admitted that, you know, you need that high-powered offense to compete in college football these days. Just having that solid defense isn't enough. And Iowa's been doing it this way forever, and they refuse to change. And it's, you know, they're going to keep doing this. They're going to beat teams that they should beat, because they're really good at defense. They'll get some big wins over some big opponents because they force turnovers. But then at the end of the day, if they find themselves in a game where they have to come back and they're down a score or two, it's going to be nearly impossible because they don't have the offense to do it. And that's just the team Iowa is. I still think they're a solid team. They'll probably still win the West, but that offense isn't pretty, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better.
Yeah, Jeff Brohm has Kirk Ferentz's number, and I think credit due to the Purdue defense as well. Their strength of schedule has not been the greatest, but on paper, they were a good defense. And you saw that come to fruition on Saturday against Iowa. You know, George Karlaftis, that kid is an animal for Purdue. And he definitely led the charge. He was all over Spencer Petras throughout the game. And just, you know, that unit performed really well. I still don't, in the grand scheme of things, I don't know what it means for Purdue. I think they're still a 7-5 team or something of that nature, but credit to the defense. They played really well, even if it was against, and I don't want to say inept Iowa offense, but they did what they needed to do to come out with an upset victory. Although I don't know how upsetting it was, I guess is the broader point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just, you know, Purdue now, to their credit, is ranked in the top 25. They're at the very 25th spot. Ohio State will probably have to play both of those teams. If they, you know, if they win out, they'll play Iowa in the Big Ten title, and they obviously have Purdue on the schedule. So they have two demons to exercise there coming up later this year. But just looking around kind of the rest of the top five, everyone else kind of handled business. Georgia and Cincinnati continued to look like Georgia and Cincinnati, both getting dominating wins. Oklahoma kind of looks like it has new life with Caleb Williams at quarterback, which is, you know, something I kind of expected once they bench Rattler. I really like Caleb Williams, and that team, that offense just runs so much better with him under center. Bama looked angry against Mississippi State, beating them 49-9. So the Bama, I think, is still going to be a team in play. And if they can beat Georgia at the end of the year in the SEC title game, I think we'll see two SEC teams in the playoff. And then other than that, you know, just kind of around the Big Ten, Michigan State stayed undefeated with a 20-15 win over Indiana. And I guess that's really only the only notable things that happened among ranked teams. There was also, I mean, another just funny storyline outside the Big Ten was that LSU beat Florida and then promptly told Ed Orgeron he's fired at the end of the season. So I guess a weird weekend of college football in a way, but nothing overly exciting. I don't think, you know, the Tennessee Ole Miss game got weird at the end with people throwing mustard bottles and such on the field at Tennessee. But other than that, there wasn't a ton of intrigue over the weekend. And it was, you know, it, like I said, like we kind of said going in, if there was a weekend to ever go pumpkin picking or, you know, walk through a cornfield, that was probably it. So we didn't miss a ton. And, you know, it just, like we talked about just getting into this topic, you know, it shows how good Ohio State has it that they don't suffer these kind of, you know, the clunkers that, you know, they're not going to score 7 points. I know they've had their, you know, obviously the Purdue game and the Iowa loss of past was a weird circumstance. And I don't think that's the kind of thing you're going to see under Ryan Day in any way, but you know, watching offense this weekend, unless you were watching really the Alabama or Oklahoma games, was not fun.
Yeah, I think the whole week and really the whole season, excuse me, I don't know how odd this week was, because this whole season seems sort of odd. It definitely seems out of the ordinary, but I think it just speaks to the parity in college football this year. And that's good for the game. You know, it's good when you get some different teams up there in the top five, top 10, even if it doesn't last, you know, like Iowa wasn't going to last as the number two team in the country, but it's good for the game when there is increased parity and there is an opportunity for more teams to get a bite at the apple. And so as we move forward and maybe the playoff grows, we don't know when it's going to grow. All of that stuff is still TBD, but it's a positive development for the game, even if it makes Ohio State fans feel a little uncomfortable. You know, we love those seasons when we know we're almost guaranteed a top four, top five spot as long as we take care of business. Maybe some increased pressure is good in the grand scheme of things. Maybe it makes Ohio State and other teams dial in and focus more and avoid those upsets later in the season. So I think it's a good thing for the game. Yeah, it's odd to see some of these upsets, but at the end of the day, you want to see competition. You want to see, at least I want to see, more of like that NFL atmosphere where a lot of teams have an opportunity to sort of reach the playoff and get to a championship game. It's just, it's refreshing, I guess, is the bigger point. It's refreshing to see new teams rise up and challenge some of these old stalwarts.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because it does feel like that, and like it has been a weird season, but at the end of the day, like there's a very realistic chance that we see a college football playoff of Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. So while these teams are all like, it does seem like there's less gap between the top teams and the bottom teams, I think it's funny that, you know, other than Clemson, who is an entirely dead college football team and they'll probably lose to Pitt this weekend, we still could see like a very, you know, similar top four than we've seen in years prior. So even with all the parity, which I do think you're correct on, it is, you know, there's still a real possibility that we see the same old suspects in the final four at the end of the year. So that's probably the likelihood of, you know, what'll force us to get towards that 8-team playoff or whatever have you, the new number we get to. But it seems like if there's going to be four teams in the playoff, we're going to wind up with some four out of the top six that we see every year. So until that changes, I don't know how much parity we'll need to really knock off one of the big names in college football and not see one of those four in it. But nonetheless,
James,
yeah, go ahead.
I really don't want to sidetrack us, so you can move on past this pretty quickly if you want. But I thought it was interesting. I saw a clip online of Dan Patrick talking about he had heard from a source that they are looking at moving towards a 12-team playoff. Did you see that?
I have not, but that sounds like a lot.
Yeah, like he alluded to it. Who knows, you know, what his sources are like. You know, for my money, DP is one of the greatest on-air personalities, but I don't know how much of an insider he truly is. But I thought that was interesting that he at least threw that little nugget out there. And if that happens, guess what? I'm all for that, too. I would be game for up to 16, but that's just a little aside that I saw during the week that I want to throw out there.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they're obviously looking at 8, 12, 16, whatever, you know, the number is going to be, but it is tough for, I think, it's really only tough for fans of, like, Ohio State, Alabama, and, like, the top schools, where your games are going to matter a little bit less, because, you know, in a 12 to 16 team playoff, Ohio State is in virtually every year, regardless of what they do. It doesn't really matter. Like, they could probably lose a game or two and still make it in that scenario, so it does make the regular season feel a little bit less important, but that's really only the case for a very select few number of schools. So as Ohio State fans, we might complain about it a little bit, but at the end of the day, getting a guaranteed playoff spot isn't the worst thing in the world, but we won't go too much into that. We'll have tons of time at the end of the year to discuss college football playoff stuff. But in the meantime, we will get to the Indiana Hoosiers, who, as we alluded to earlier, you know, Ohio State kind of has their schedule backloaded where, you know, they're going to play a tough second half of the team. For Indiana, I don't know who they pissed off, but their schedule in this first half of the season has been absolutely brutal. They've started the season 2-4. All four of those losses have come against ranked teams. They opened up the season at Iowa. They also have losses on the road at Penn State and then at home against Cincinnati and Michigan State. And now coming off that Michigan State loss, have to play Ohio State. So they're playing five ranked teams in their first seven games. Certainly not the easiest stretch in the world, especially for an Indiana team that has been really ravaged by injuries. So I don't think this Indiana team is as bad as their record would indicate. I don't think they're a 2-4 team. I think if they had played, you know, the Maryland's and Rutgers and Minnesota and the teams they're going to play later in the year, I think they would look a lot better. But obviously, the injury to Michael Penix has hampered them a bit. They've lost some of their top guys on defense here and there. So overall, it's been a tough year for Indiana. Coming off, it was a really special year for them in 2020. And yeah, it's not quite the matchup we expected to see later in the year, especially with it being at Indiana. We thought there would be, you know, a marquee game, and it is a night game. And, you know, there will be some extra emotion for Indiana because they thought they got screwed last year when Ohio State made the Big Ten title game, which is incorrect, but still it's how they felt. There will be intrigue in this game, but it isn't quite the, you know, Ohio State's coming to this game as 19-point favorites. It isn't quite the upset special we expect it to be, but it could still be a really good game if some things break certain ways.
Yeah, I think that, to use a football term, Indiana clearly outkicked their coverage last year in the performance where they almost, or, you know, in their opinion, should have made it to a Big Ten championship game. I think Tom Allen's a really, really good coach, and I think he's really, really good for that Indiana program. But just where they're at right now, they cannot overcome injuries to some of their key players. They can't just reload or backfill positions as easily as an Ohio State, Alabama, you name it. And we've seen that this year, right? Not only have they played a very difficult schedule, but they've been ravaged by injuries, which you alluded to, which we'll kind of get into further. But had all of their guys been and remained healthy, I think we'd be talking about a different matchup and a different team. But the way things have played out, you know, they can't overcome losses to a quarterback, some of their best defensive backs. They've been hurt receiver-wise, too. The transfer they got from Florida State, his name is escaping me right now. He was going to be a weapon for them. He tore his ACL, I believe. So they're just not in a position to where they can backfill as easily as we can. And it's going to hurt. It's probably going to hurt for the remainder of the year. They're not a 2-4 football team, but they do have a 2-4 record right now. And the thing that makes them dangerous, though, is what do they have to lose at this point, right? They can throw all hands on deck. Anyone who's healthy, they're going to put out there. They're going to try and get creative. And under Tom Allen, I think they're going to play their butts off, too. So it still presents a challenge, just not the challenge we anticipated coming into the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And like on top of the injuries, I think a big, you know, underlying story going into the season was, you know, losing Wop Fillier to the NFL was a big loss for them. And I know they still have Ty Freifogel, but it was almost like their version of Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, obviously at a much smaller scale. But Wop Fillier and Ty Freifogel were a really good duo for them. And I think now only having the one, you know, teams are able to just key in on Freifogel. And, you know, like you said, they've had some other wide receiver injuries and they just haven't really had a clear number two guy out there. So teams could just, you know, put their best guy on Ty Freifogel, and it really limits what Indiana could do on offense. We know that Indiana has never really been a great running team. They've really been a passing team. So between the injury to Penix, you know, having only one true star wide receiver out there and some other injuries, it's really hampered what they could do on offense. And it shows in their numbers. They come into this game ranking as the number 107 offense in the country. They're number 96 in rushing offense, number 88 in passing offense. To their credit, they are still really good on defense. They're the number 37 total defense in the country. They rank 39th in rushing and 49th in passing yards allowed. So they are still playing really good on defense, but the offense has just not been there due to a variety of factors that we've touched on. And, you know, we've alluded to Michael Penix. It's not 100% certain that he's not going to play in this game. But it doesn't sound likely. And, you know, what makes it sound even less likely is that they're not redshirting their freshman backup, Donovan McCulley. It seems like he's going to be their number two guy behind Jack Tuttle. And so having them not redshirt him seems like they might feel like they need him. So I feel like it's highly doubtful that Michael Penix will play in this game. And, you know, even when he was playing this year, he wasn't having his greatest season. I think the guy has just been too beat up and injuries have really gotten to him, because when he first showed up in Indiana, he really looked like a star. And now he's just had a ton of significant injuries. And, you know, coming into this year, before in the five games he played before he got hurt, he had 4 touchdowns and 7 picks. And he just didn't look like him usual himself. He doesn't have the confidence he once had. He doesn't have the accuracy he once had. And I think he's really just been beaten down by these injuries. And it's really sad to see, because I really liked him as a quarterback. He was one of the best quarterback like prospects they've ever had. But now they have Jack Tuttle out there as their starter. Last week against Michigan State, he completed 28 of 52 passes for 188 yards, no touchdowns, 2 picks. He's really not, you know, the guy. If they had their choice, they obviously wouldn't have had him as the starter coming into the year. I don't think he's bad. I think they kind of mold the offense a little bit differently around him, where they do more of short stuff instead of the deep balls they like to throw at Penix. But it's clearly not the offense Indiana would like to be running. And I feel bad for Penix, and I feel bad for Tom Allen, because I feel like, you know, if he hadn't sustained all those injuries and they had some of these guys on offense, I don't think they'd be quite as good as last year they looked. Like you said, they outkicked their coverage, but I do think that they're a better team than the record showed this year. So I think neither record these past 2 years are indicative of the type of team Indiana is.
The thing that's a real bummer for Michael Penix Jr. is, yes, it's the injuries, but what the injuries do is it takes away, or it robs him of an opportunity to put a stretch together. I always feel like he's had in the past 2 to 3 really good games, and then something happens. And I've been critical of his accuracy as a passer, but he can extend plays. He's creative back there. And for all the other guys on the team, Fry Fogle, you mentioned Wap Villior, Peyton Hendershot, I'm big on their tight end. I think that Penix has still been the guy that makes that offense go because of his ability to extend plays and be athletic back there. So you're right. Like, something's just not right with him this year. I don't think that he has regressed greatly. I think the injuries have just mounted up. Maybe it's in his head too. There's always a confidence factor that comes into play. But even when he was quote unquote healthy, he wasn't the same guy. And that does suck for him. And it sucks for the Big Ten too, because I think they've got a really talented team around him. But when you kind of take out one of the legs, and I would definitely say that Michael Penix Jr. was a major appendage. I guess you could call him the arm, the left arm, but it's just, that's something, like I said, they can't come back from. Jack Tuttle is a fifth-year senior who's been primarily a backup for a reason. He's not on the same level as Michael Penix Jr. And I think the biggest surprise, though, from what we've seen from their offense is the inability for Stephen Carr to get much going. You know, I know that he wasn't wildly successful at USC, but he still had that pedigree and he played in a lot of rotations, right? He was still a decent running back, but right now for Indiana, I think he's averaging like 3.6 yards per carry. They've not been able to get the running game going. So are you surprised at the ineffectiveness of Stephen Carr, or do you think that says more about their offensive line and their struggles there?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by just him specifically, but at the same time, like I said, like, Indiana has just seemed to never want to run the football, and they've never really been particularly good at it. You know, they had Stevie Scott there for the last 10 years, and it was just like he was a power back that was going to get you 4 yards a carry, and, you know, kind of like we've talked about with some Ohio State running backs this year, he's a guy that's, you know, if you give him 4 yards, he'll get you 4 yards, and if you give him 12 yards, he'll get you 4 yards. So it's just like, it's not a great explosive rushing attack. He only has a little over 400 rushing yards on the season with 4 touchdowns. And like you said, he's only averaging 3.6 yards per carry. And, you know, it doesn't help when they don't have much of a passing game to establish the running game, even if they're trying to do it in reverse splits. Outside of the guys you mentioned, Fry Fogle and Hendershot, there's really not much there. Both of those guys only have a touchdown each on the season, and those are their top two receiving threats. So that's not what you love to see. It's not great. Along the offensive line, they return 4 starters, but it's a unit that wasn't particularly good last year and isn't having a particularly good season this year. They're tied for 58th in all of college football with 12 sacks allowed. So, you know, overall, it's just not the pieces on, they have a couple pieces on offense, but it's not enough to get the job done. I still think it'll be an interesting, I wouldn't say test, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting, like, to look at for the Ohio State defense and how they play in this game, just because I guess, you know, I would say it's a similarly effective offense to that of Maryland's. I think Maryland's, you know, Rakeem Jarrett is probably better than anyone on Indiana. But other than that, I think, you know, these are two similarly styled offenses in the way they like to attack short, and they don't really run the ball a ton. So it'll be another test for Ohio State secondary. We'll get to see some of their healthy players out there. I think it'll be a good matchup on that side of the ball. And another step up before, you know, Ohio State plays an actual good offense, or one of the better offenses they'll play in the Big Ten, at least, in Penn State the following week. So, you know, as we've talked about week after week, it seems like there's just a ramp up in competition every week. So I think this is another good test for the Ohio State defense, even though, you know, obviously, you know, Jack Tuttle isn't quite the threat that Michael Penix is. And, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that are not healthy.
Sorry, Jane. I think that the Peyton Hendershot matchup will be interesting. And I wrote about him for this week's offensive player to watch. He is a really skillful tight end. And I don't feel like Ohio State has faced one of those this year. 2 years ago, he was, gosh, I don't have the numbers in front of me that I had for the article, but you know, like 50 some catches, 600 yards.
Yeah, and he was a guy that was expected to be really good last year, and he just kind of disappeared, and now he seems to be back. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, and you know, he had some off-field stuff, which, you know, I don't know enough about. I read up on it a little bit. I'm not going to go into it in that much detail, but that probably played a role in his ineffectiveness as a player in 2020. I don't know, but the thing that I'm really interested in is to see how the Ohio State defense plans for him and schemes against him, because down the road, we'll see a couple other teams, Penn State, Michigan, maybe Iowa. They like to involve the tight ends as well. I don't know if they're as skilled as a Peyton Hendershot. He's 6'4", 250, decent speed. He's not a big down the field guy, but they'll put him out wide. They even threw him at least one, I think two screens out wide against Michigan State. He's really good with the ball in his hands. He gets a lot of his yardage after the catch. And so when you think about this Ohio State defense, A, they haven't faced a guy like this, and B, they're still trying to figure out their own, definitely the back seven. And so what will they do? How will they plan for Peyton Hendershot? I talked about it in the article that's going up tomorrow. You know, the linebackers have not been tasked with guarding a tight end for a majority of the game. I think Cody Simon and Steel Chambers would probably be your go-tos for that from the linebacker position. They're, I don't know if more athletic is the right way to put it, but I think that they're more ideally suited for coverage, because I think Taraja Mitchell is just, he's a heat-seeking missile. It's see ball, get ball, hurt the guy carrying it. And I love that about Taraja Mitchell, but he hasn't made any plays in the passing game. Cody Simon has a pick. But the one guy that I would really like to see on the field is Craig Young, because of his physical profile, because of his skills, and his ability. You know, he matches up size-wise with Peyton Hendershot, and he's got better speed than Peyton Hendershot. We've seen glimpses of Craig Young. He had the pick six. He's played, in my opinion, really well when he's been out there. So I'd like to see him involved in some way, because I don't think that Ohio State, it's going to be a group effort, but I hope that Ohio State does not look to bring safeties down or keep safeties down to cover Peyton Hendershot, because I think the safeties we have are better as kind of like roamers, I guess I would put it. Ronnie Hickman is a guy that you put him kind of in the back seven, back half of the field, and you kind of let him roam. You let him make plays. He's the leading tackler on the team. And if you put him in a coverage role, I don't know if that limits his effectiveness. I think that it would. So I hope that they have some sort of plan to involve multiple people, but Craig Young is the guy that I'm really interested in to see if he gets an increase in reps and playing time specifically for this game because of the mobile tight end, the pass catching tight end that Indiana has.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think the Hendershot versus Ohio State's linebacker core is a very important matchup to watch in this game. And like you said, Ohio State hasn't really played a team with a pass-catching tight end that's a threat like Henderson is. And I don't think Ohio State, we talked earlier about how they have a lack of depth at linebacker, and I don't really think they have a guy who is more of a pure coverage linebacker. I think like a guy like Pete Werner was that guy for the past few years. We saw him match up. We saw him match up with like Pat Freiermuth on Penn State on a number of occasions on one-on-ones. And I don't know if Ohio State has a linebacker they could trust right now in a one-on-one coverage scenario with a guy like Peyton Hendershot. So like you said, it'll be interesting to see how they figure that out. Will they have, you know, the guy who's the bullet kind of shadow him, whether it be Ronnie Hickman or Craig Young? Do they try, you know, bringing down Marcus Williamson from his safety spot? That could be interesting. He's a guy who's played, you know, some slot corner in the past, so that could be an interesting matchup for them, even though he's probably undersized in that matchup. So it'll be something to watch. It's something that, you know, Ohio State's had 2 weeks now to prepare for, so I'm sure they're ready for it, but it will be something that we see from Ohio State's defense that we haven't seen quite yet. And I think, you know, the move to more of a cover two look will probably help in that area, because I'm sure a lot of Peyton Hendershot's plays are not, you know, deep balls. There's probably a lot of stuff over the middle and a lot of short out routes and stuff like that as tight ends mostly run. So I think that will help in this area, and maybe they'll look to run a little bit of zone across the middle to kind of help out with that. But it will be interesting to watch that matchup. And then just, yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think that Ohio State, we've seen in the past, has struggled with good tight ends. You know, see the Iowa loss that we referenced earlier. That was pretty much all tight end based. I don't imagine they'll have the same issues they had in that game, but it's definitely something that we haven't seen yet. And it's, you know, every week we kind of learn more about this Ohio State defense, and this will be another way that we learn about them. Can they cover these tight ends they've struggled with in the past? How do they look to do it? What do the rotations look like on defense? Do we see more Craig Young? There's a lot of questions we still have, and I think that that matchup will provide some good answers as to, you know, who Ohio State trusts out there the most in these coverage situations.
Yeah, I think that Indiana's offense versus Ohio State's defense provides some intrigue, but I don't think they have any shot of really outscoring Ohio State or outgunning them for sure. I think it's going to be the other way around if they hope to stay in this game. I do think that for the injuries that they've suffered and are still dealing with, I still think Indiana has some skill on defense, and they've got some guys on that side of the ball. You know, they've got Micah McFadden, 3.5 sacks this year. He's their leading tackler. He's a dog at linebacker. I really like him. They brought in Ryder Anderson from Ole Miss, and I don't know if you've seen any of him. He's a dude at defensive end. He's big. He's like 6'6", 270, if I'm not mistaken. Came over from Ole Miss. He's got a ton of experience, 30 tackles on the season, 2.5 sacks. So a couple of guys in that front seven, and the secondary has really, really been hampered by injuries. It doesn't sound like they don't sound too optimistic about Taiwan Mullen and Reese Taylor. They're definitely questionable right now. And, you know, Tom Allen didn't exude confidence in getting them back on the field. If they were able to get healthy, then I think it becomes at least a little more interesting, because those are two starters, two good guys in the secondary. I mean, Mullen specifically was a monster last year. You know, I think he had like 3.5 sacks, couple of picks, all Big Ten guy. He's been dinged up. He's missed the last couple of games. So their secondary is where they could either it's going to be feast or famine. You know, I think we still put up numbers, but if they can get some guys healthy by Saturday, I do think it makes it a little bit more interesting, just based on past performance and experience. They still do have Devin Matthews. He missed the first couple of games, but he's back, and he's their third or fourth leading tackler, I think, in only 3 games played. So they do still have some talent. But again, it comes back to, do they have enough? Because if you're going up against this Ohio State offense, you need 4 to 5 to 6, 7 really good players on that side of the ball to hope to compete. And I don't know that they can get to that number. I think they have 3 or 4 healthy, and you know, the Mullen and Taylor injuries, that did not help their chances, to say the least.
Are you telling me that having a not healthy secondary against Ohio State's offense is bad?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of goes without saying, but that was probably their only chance to really, they would hope to force some turnovers, right? Because they're too limited elsewhere, even with the great play of Micah McFadden. So if this secondary is in its current state, then I think I don't want to say this, but it could get ugly just based on what we've seen from Ohio State's offense. And that's not speaking about the coaching or the ability on the other side of the ball. It's just, it's a numbers game and they don't have the numbers.
Yeah, it's honestly a shame. Tywan Mullen is one of the top corners in all the country, not only the Big Ten. He has missed the team's last two games. Tom Allen said he was hopeful today that he'd get him and Reese Taylor back, but it doesn't, you know, he's obviously going to play close to the vest with Ohio State coming to town. I would be surprised if, you know, either of those guys played, and even if they do play, I'd be surprised if they're 100%. And, you know, even if they have Tywan Mullen back, there's only one of him, and you still have to cover, you know, if he's on Chris Olave, you still have to cover Garrett Wilson, Jackson Smith, and Jigba. So it's a tall task for any defensive secondary to face, and especially if you're missing your top guy out there, it becomes a nearly impossible task. But the other two guys you mentioned were also guys I had written down, Micah McFadden and Ryder Anderson. Micah McFadden, probably one of the top linebackers in the Big Ten. He's definitely Indiana's best defensive player right now with Mullen out. Leads the team with 36 total tackles, has 9 tackles for loss, and like you said, 3.5 sacks. All of those are team highs. He also has a forced fumble and a fumble recovery. He does it all out there. He blitzes. He plays in coverage. He's a really, really good linebacker. He's a guy that would certainly start on Ohio State's defense right now, that's for sure. And then, like you said, Ryder Anderson, the transfer from Ole Miss, he is second on the team with 6 tackles for a loss and 2.5 sacks. He's been their best defensive lineman. So, you know, for a team like Indiana, which we thought coming into the season, the strength of that defense would be their back seven, it's more or less been the front seven. They've actually been a really good team against the run this year. They held Kenneth Walker on Michigan State last week to 84 yards on 23 carries. So we'll see if they could have a similar performance against the Travion Henderson and that Ohio State offensive line. And another guy I had written down here is Marcelino Ball, who is kind of Indiana's version of the Bullet. He had a torn ACL last year. He comes back this year. He's got 21 total tackles on the year and a pick. So he's another interesting guy out there. And, you know, this Indiana defense as a whole, Kane Womack is gone, their defensive coordinator that did so much good for them. But they still play a 4-2-5. They still love to bring a ton of pressure up the middle. We've seen them, you know, it kind of confuses teams because it's not what you usually see. Usually you see the pressure off the edge. So by bringing that, like, kind of speed blitz up the middle, it does seem to confuse quarterbacks. We saw it last year with Justin Fields when he had one of his worst games at Ohio State when he threw 3 picks against them. But, you know, even still in that game, Ohio State led 35-7, and it wasn't too much trouble until Ohio State kind of took their foot off the gas in the second half. But nonetheless, the defense is certainly the part of this team that I'd be more concerned with than the offense of it. And with the way Ohio State's playing right now, I'm less worried about Ohio State's offense than their defense. So it's kind of strength on strength here with Ohio State's offense against their defense. But like we've talked about, with Mullen out potentially, with Reese Taylor out potentially, it's really going to put a burden on that secondary. And, you know, with the way C.J. Stroud is slinging it right now, even a fully healthy Indiana would probably have a pretty tough time stopping that Ohio State offense, as most teams in the country, not named Georgia, likely would.
Yeah, I mean, I think they would have to rely on multiple turnovers to really keep this game super close. And just taking it back to Micah McFadden, I mean, I don't know why I find myself watching too much football, first of all, but, you know, I watch a lot, as many Big Ten games as I can, and I've seen quite a bit of Micah McFadden. I don't know if he's one of the best linebackers in the country, but if he's not, he's damn close. He's just a do-it-all guy. I love to watch him play. I like his style. He's willing to get his nose in there on every single play, you know, lay down some hits. He can play in coverage. He's just a really great linebacker, and it's another bummer, the injury situation, because you get a guy like this at Indiana, his skill level and his kind of, you know, football acumen, he is arguably a transcendent college football player, if you want to title it that way. And for him to, you know, be a senior coming back off of a great year and individually a great year, now he just sees guys going around him left and right. That's got to be a bummer for a guy like that at a school like Indiana. So I still expect him to make some plays. I think he's going to be a thorn in Ohio State's side. And, you know, he's only one guy, but I'm still going to have my eyes on him too, just because of, you know, his skill set and the way he plays. You said it, I would take him on Ohio State in a heartbeat. And that's not a shot at anybody else on Ohio State's team. I just like Micah McFadden that much. I think he's a hell of a football player.
Absolutely. And I think the key for Indiana's defense in this game and for Indiana as a whole, just to keep this game close, is to really get pressure on CJ Stroud. We haven't seen a team really come after CJ Stroud all that much. He's had a relatively clean pocket most of the time. He hasn't really been under duress a ton. So if Indiana could get a little bit of a pass rush in this game, we know they like to blitz. I'm sure they'll do it a ton in this game. CJ Stroud's still a young quarterback. He's still a first-year starter. He hasn't seen a ton of pressure in his face, and maybe that could force him into some turnovers. Who knows? But like we saw it against Justin Fields last year, and it worked on occasion. So I'm sure they'll look to dial up a similar scheme to what they did against Ohio State last year, at least what they did in the second half, which seemed to work better than whatever it was they did in the first half of that game. But yeah, I think if Indiana has any chance in this game, it's going to start with that defense getting pressure and forcing Ohio State into some mistakes, because if they're just going to, you know, sit back there and let Ohio State pass and try to just defend the pass, I don't think that's going to work out for really anyone in the country, and especially not with the health status of Indiana's best players. So I'm looking at that as kind of one of the keys to this game. Can Indiana get pressure? We know how good Ohio State's offensive line has been this year in pass protection, at least. The run blocking has been, you know, iffy at sometimes. I think the four tackles offensive line has something to do with that. I would like to see, you know, more of Matt Jones. I don't think you could really run a situational offensive guard out there, but if you were to do it, he would be the guy. I think he's a better run blocker than some of the tackles they have playing on the interior. But either way, I think Ohio State's offensive line has played well. I think this is one of the better, you know, teams in terms of getting pressure they've faced. So we'll see how that matchup plays out. But yeah, I think if Indiana has any chance of keeping this game close, it's going to have to start with, you know, forcing CJ Stroud into mistakes and getting in his face early and often.
Yeah, no disagreement here. We keep circling back around to injuries. I think that's the big theme here is Indiana's just too decimated by them. I think it's going to hurt them in the long run. I hope that they do get some guys back. Even if it's not this week, I'd like to see them get competitive. But no, we're kind of dancing around it. Let's get the score predictions. Gene, where are you at on this one?
Yeah, if Indiana was fully healthy, and that includes Michael Penix and the defensive guys, I think this would be a closer game. I know the line Vegas has is about 19 right now. I don't really even see it being that close. I'm still not fully sold on Ohio State's defense, but I don't think they have to be all that great to stop Jax Tuttle in that offense right now. Funny enough, I'm sure this is a story everyone will tell this week, and it was told a little bit last year. Jax Tuttle was the high school quarterback of Chris Olave, and the reason that Ohio State went to scout Chris Olave was actually to look at Jax Tuttle as a quarterback prospect, and they wound up finding Chris Olave when they went to go view him. So the reason Ohio State has Jax Tuttle to thank for Chris Olave, so maybe they'll throw him a bone and give him a free touchdown there just as a thank you note for Chris Olave. But I think that Ohio State continues to roll in this game. I think it's a good, you know, another next step towards that Penn State big matchup that's going to be now announced as a night game. So that should be fun in their all red uniforms that weekend. I'm going to say Ohio State 51-17. I think Ohio State's offense, especially with all, you know, without Mullen out there, I don't see how Indiana has anyone to stop those wide receivers on Ohio State. I think the offense is just clicking it too well right now, especially coming off a bye week to really fix some of the minor issues they had. I don't think they'll be able to hold Travion Henderson to the totals that Kenneth Walker had, even though I really like Kenneth Walker. I just think Travion Henderson is a different kind of dude. And, you know, between the running game and the passing game, I think Ohio State rolls and their defense does enough against Jack Tunnel to really keep them off the scoreboard.
Okay, so I like your Indiana prediction, and I still do think that Ohio State covers, but I'm going to be a little bit more conservative here. I think for all the injuries they've dealt with and, you know, and everything, especially on the defensive side of the ball, I know they're hurting, but I know they've still got some playmakers. So I think they actually hold Ohio State under 40, but I'm going to go with 38-17. You know, this is going to be the first game Ohio State plays, I believe, where the weather is going to be a little bit cooler, probably, you know, 50-ish here in Columbus come Saturday night. Fall has finally arrived. So not that that has a huge impact on the game, but I don't know. I'm just going to go over under on 7 point total impact there for whatever reason. So I'm going to say 38-17. I think that Ohio State will look good. I think they'll button up what they need to, but I think Indiana makes a couple of plays, maybe forces a couple more punts than we're accustomed to seeing. I don't know if it's going to be a turnover game or anything like that, but I'll just be a little bit more conservative and say 38-17.
Yeah, this is the first game of the year I'm actually like confident in Ohio State winning big, which means there's absolutely no chance they actually win big. It's going to be a much closer game than we expect, and I'm sure I'll be stressing in the second half, but Yeah, that's just kind of where I'm at. I've, you know, the last 2 weeks may have jaded me. I had a week off to think about the Maryland and the Rutgers performances. I have that dancing in my head. So maybe I am overly optimistic, but I just, you know, I don't know how much. I know Indiana, like, they have all this stuff with Ohio State last year and everything, but at 2-4 on the year, I mean, their season's more or less over. I don't know how much they have left to play for at this point. You know, a lot of injuries, a lot of bad luck coming their way, so I just don't know. I mean, maybe they'll give it some fire in the first half, and then if Ohio State gets out to a big lead, they just kind of, you know, fall asleep. But I could see it going either way. Yeah, I don't really. Do you have any other closing thoughts, Josh, before we get out of here? I will be. I just want to put it out there. This is coming out on Wednesday. Coastal Carolina plays tonight, and they're -4 against App State, and I will be taking that because that seems like free money. But that's all I have for you in terms of betting advice. Josh?
No, I was going to bring up the schedule, and you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say we have a little midweek special with Coastal against App State. No, you know, the schedule is – it's kind of junk this weekend as well. Now, we said that last week, but I'm not really finding any really intriguing matchups. I can't even find right now one matchup of ranked teams. So, you know, it would be – upset alert if you could find that. A little bit interested in the Oklahoma State Iowa State game. Oklahoma State's up to 8th in the country right now. Iowa State came into the season with a lot of hype. They're currently unranked, but if you believe in Matt Campbell, which I don't, you know, I know Ohio State had a flirtation with him or supposed flirtation with him for a while. Look, you know, just because you get Iowa State to 9 wins every once in a blue moon, I'm not overly impressed. That being said, I'll be probably dialed into that game a little bit to see if they can take down the Cowboys. And really, that's about it. You've got USC, Notre Dame. That doesn't have the intrigue that it normally has. Notre Dame's probably overhyped at number 13. USC has not performed well this year. So another one of those weeks where you can probably plan some stuff for earlier in the day and just make sure you're home in time for the Ohio State game. But going to be another kind of lackadaisical week in college football. So I'm just going to be getting hyped up for that night game and watching for any upsets. I don't think Wisconsin takes down Purdue. Northwestern, no chance against Michigan. Same thing for Illinois versus Penn State. This should be a week where the big teams should roll, and I expect them to do so.
Yeah, I mean, the most fun games to watch this week are definitely going to be those midweek games. I think Coastal at App State will be a really fun game to watch. I think the same about Tulane, SMU. So it's a big week for the Group of Five teams. But yeah, like you said, other than that, there is really no intriguing matchups this weekend. I think it'll be really funny if Clemson loses to Pitt.
Underdog.
I don't know. I mean, them being the underdog, it makes me almost have to bet on Clemson just out of like principle. But it would be very funny if Pitt wins. I mean, Clemson's offense is absolutely atrocious, and Kenny Pickett's killing it at Pitt. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they won that game. But it's a weird season, man. I mean, Northwestern beating Michigan would be hilarious. That's definitely not going to happen, but it would be very, very funny. Unranked Wisconsin playing at ranked Purdue is exactly what we all thought would happen going into the year. And other than that, yeah, really not much on the schedule.
What about Tennessee at Alabama? I mean,
I was looking
at
that. If that was at Tennessee, I think it would be intriguing, but,
because they would throw stuff at Nick Saban.
Exactly. Yes. That just for the golf balls being thrown at Nick Saban, it would be more intriguing, but yeah, I mean, Tennessee is definitely playing better than they were earlier in the year. They're still not great. I don't know if their quarterback is hurt long-term. I don't, you know, Joe Milton is certainly not that guy, having run out of bounds instead of throwing the ball on the last play of the game. I don't really know the decision there, but yeah, man, it's a bad schedule this weekend. So yeah, get your fall activities in early, watch some of the midweek games when there's nothing else on, and then strap in for Ohio State, Indiana at night in Indiana. I've been to that stadium. It's pretty cool. When I was there, it's a smaller stadium. It was like 50% Ohio State fans, if not more, when I was there. I'm sure it'll be the same with the way that Indiana has started this year. So it won't be too much of a home field advantage for Indiana, I would imagine, at least, you know, for the second half, hopefully. But yeah, it should be a fun game. And that'll really, you know, if you're an Ohio State fan, that's really the only thing to look forward to this weekend. There's not a ton of fun on the schedule, but maybe, you know, we had a bad week last week on a bad schedule on paper. Maybe we get the good week with a bad week on schedule this week.
Yeah, we just need to get through another one, and then Ohio State's really going to get into the meat of their schedule. So, you know, stay with us. Keep tuning in for these previews, and just, you know, soon enough, we're going to be talking about the Penn States, Michigan States, and Michigans of the world.
Oh, week nine is a banger in college football. We'll get to that next week, but there's a lot of good games on week nine besides Ohio State. That's especially in the Big Ten. That's Michigan plays Michigan State that weekend. You got Penn State, Ohio State. There's a lot of big matchups that weekend to look forward to. So that will be a good one. So get your fall activities done now, because next weekend you're on the TV for all Saturday. So get it done now.
All right, Gene, you got me. I'm going to mess around this weekend, and then I'm fully dialed in next week. I'm only like 80 to 90% dialed in every week so far this season, but my promise to you is to be 100% next week.
We love to see it. All right, well, that's going to be all for us this week. We will be back with you sometime after the game this weekend to give you a recap on all the things that happened in Bloomington. Be sure to read all of our content at landgrantholyland.com. Be sure to like, rate, review, subscribe to the podcast, all that good stuff. And for Josh Dooley, I am Gene Ross. We will see you this weekend. And as always, go Bucks.